Well, Sean Evers, Managing Partner of Gulf Intelligence. Sean, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Richard.
Also with us this evening, delighted to say, is Andy Sutherland, Vice President of Senergy, energy services company based here in Dubai. Andy, good to see you.
Hi, Richard. Good to be back after the summer.
We've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, including, is this the end of the energy and oil super cycle? That would have severe implications for us here in the Middle East if it is. But first of all, let's talk about the here and now, Sean. The oil price. Just before we all went away on holiday, Brent crude was hovering around about $115 a barrel. And as we sit here now, it's also hovering just below $115 a barrel. But it's not been a smooth ride, has it?
No, I think I was at the OPEC International Seminar in mid-June, and oil prices at that point had fallen. I mean, we've sort of sat at an average of 110 for most of the year and most of the last 12 months. But in the late of the second quarter this year, prices did come off quite dramatically and quite quickly to down to 90 or so dollars a barrel for Brent crude. And that certainly had all of the energy oil producers at OPEC very concerned that we could have been seeing as you were said there, the end of the super cycle of commodities, but also all of the reasons why one would argue that oil prices should be weaker were starting to come into more into center focus. And that really was China. Economic growth was clearly slowing and was very much grabbing the headlines. Instead of sort of being an average of 10% over the last 10 years, we're down to an average of 7.5%. And a lot of the noise of the Arab Spring and social unrest and Middle East wars and God knows what kind of came out of the headlines as well. And so it came back to focusing on fundamentals in the sort of late second quarter, and everything seemed to indicate, well, a weaker oil price made more sense than $110, $120 a barrel. But I think over the summer, when we were all lying on cold, frigid beaches in the west of Ireland, as I was, the markets went through a big rally that might have caught a lot of people by surprise. You know, a year ago, it was there was turmoil in Europe, and the Americans sort of went off a cliff with their debt ceiling debacle. But this summer, everything sort of seemed to be quiet enough, and yet the markets rallied on the equity front and the oil front. On what I struggle to find the momentum of it. There seems to be no shortage of contradictions, but they did rally nonetheless.
One of the great optimisms is that we'll hear something on Friday, isn't it, at Jackson Hole, that Ben Bernanke and Mario Draghi may push the big red print button that they both have on their desks as central bank chiefs, print a whole bunch of money that will fuel inflation and thereby...
I've got to get one of these printer machines at home. I mean, if it's that easy, why go to work? Why do anything? Just press the print button, send us all a few of them, and off you go.
It's your credit card.
Yes. It's incredible. You're absolutely right. There will be a payday on all of this quantitative easing.
Andy, let me bring you in now. You've been watching this from the perspective of Senergy, an energy services company. You're not an oil trading company as such. You're not an analyst, but nevertheless, you work in the industry and you clearly have a view on these things. Does $112.50, where we are today for Brent crude, seem about right for you?
As I said before, I always look at the long-term view and the scarcity of the resource. I believe it is. If you think back to earlier on in the year, on one of the shows we did, we were nudging $130, and we talked about the slowdown in China as being one of the things that would, you know, certainly influence the price. We've now been down to 90, we're up to 113 again today. But as Sean mentioned earlier on, we have so much volatility, and if we think about the global financial crisis, it's almost 4 years now since we had that crash in 2008. And
time flies.
So many things change, but there's just this underlying feeling that there's just not that stability or robustness around the global economy, or certainly our ability to understand it. There are so many variables that change things up and down. But I think, you know, going back to your original question, does that seem like a fair price for the commodity? I believe so, yes.
Sean, you're not quite so bullish, are you? Both in the short term, I know you've been reading stories about China and the Chinese economy losing steam. Retail in particular, Sean, you've been looking at some of the retail numbers out of China that aren't good, are they?
No, I mean, both on the retail front as well as on the production side and manufacturing, you know, all of the Chinese macro numbers are negative or poor, and China has also taken stimulus measures in the last few months to try and, you know, give this sort of slagging economy a bit of support. No dramatic stimulus like we've seen in the past, but clearly China is slowing. And I think the reality is that if you took away the sort of geopolitical headwinds that are floating around the oil-producing neighborhood of the Middle East, the reality is oil prices would reflect more what we've seen in the early part of the summer, i.e. $90 a barrel, then $120 a barrel. I think the market, if it could take its eyes off of the headlines, and one has to think about the headlines more so in New York and what's in the news there about the geopolitics rather than what's in the news here. It's a very different series of headlines that they wake up to every day about this neighborhood. And so they do have a great impact on where those traders see risk in energy supplies. And so that's clearly, it's the long battle of the last few years. The 4 years of the global crisis has been, is it demand weakness versus security of supply? And I think in the early part of the summer, we saw demand weakness grab the lead a little bit. But now come back is, I think, security of supply and the issues revolving around that are really pushing up the price. And when it comes to fair or unfair, I mean, there's no such thing really in the oil markets as whatever one trader or another is willing to pay for it for any day of the next. I suppose what's realistic, though, is what price you need it to be in order to develop new fields.
Yeah, that's a good differentiation there.
Let's talk a little bit more long-term about these issues, Andy, that you raised. And Sean, I know you've been looking at them, and you posed the question, is the commodity super cycle over? And you've been looking at an interesting piece in the Financial Times by a guy called Arusha Sharma. Now, he's head of emerging markets at Morgan Stanley Investment Management, and he wrote a piece in the FT a short while ago, and he started off by saying this: the daily news about falling oil prices is the beginning of a major shift in the global economy, the end of the commodity supercycle, the death at the rise of emerging markets led by China would continue to drive up prices for oil and other commodities. It spells trouble for the many companies and countries such as Brazil and Russia that have prospered in the past decade from the sale of raw materials to China. The commodity supercycle is over, so says Arusha Sharma. What's your view, Sean?
Well, he wrote that in early summer when this was all seeming very logical, but obviously he's taking a long-term outlook view there. I think one has to be... just take the facts as they stand. China grew for a decade or more at about 10% GDP growth per year. And obviously that had a huge impact in transforming the oil price from 10 years ago when it was averaging about $25 a barrel to today when it's averaging about $100 a barrel. I think you can draw a very straight link between the two, along with most other commodities that China has a great appetite to consume for a billion plus people. Now, when you see a trend line that's doing the opposite, i.e. down to 7.5 percentage points and maybe even goes lower, who knows, de facto, that means demand for these commodities has to come off, one presumes. But then one might argue, well, since then, India's come up and they have a billion people too, and Brazil is thumping along and they have a few hundred million. But if you just take the bare China, the coming 10 years of growth to now being softer, one would presume super cycle's over. If you look at the Australian commodity miners and all of those guys, they're having a tough time. Most of the statistics coming out of Australia vis-a-vis the mining industry is quite negative in terms of demand on their goods, whatever it might be. And so that's an indicator of weakness and weakness of demand from China.
On terms of this demand issue, Andy, to bring you in, Arusha Sharma goes on to say that the BRICS, the boom in the BRICS over the past decade, was unprecedented, almost freakishly unusual, and is now breaking up with Brazil, Russia, India and China all slowing markedly. Do you recognise that scenario?
Yes, and I think certainly with Australia, it's a good data point as BHP shelved the expansion of one of their major mines in South Australia. $30 billion expansion plan has been shelved, but it's not been cancelled. If you think back to the 70s and 80s, the Japanese growth was funding exactly the same type of commodity boom in Brazil, in Australia at the time. But what we're seeing here is we're seeing that China's economy has surpassed Japan already, and because of the population and because of the rate, I think it will continue. So I'm sure that we are going to see a softening in that cycle. I think it's worth also bearing in mind, we talk about China's slowdown. It's still growth. It's still 7-8% growth for a country that size. And then the BRICS, they will have accumulated cash reserves over the last years. I expect that they would use that to invest in their own infrastructure and use some of that money, which in turn is also going to keep the wheels going. But very interesting, you know, if you visit Europe just now, everything seems to be moving along, but you don't hear much in the way of optimism like you used to. So I think we're in for some challenging months ahead.
Yep. Sean, I'm going to jump in there. We're going to take a very, very short break, but more when we come back from Sean Evers of the Gulf Intelligence.